Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Ksubis Daf Pei. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage, and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur will begin 12 lines from the top of Daf Pei. Before we begin the actual Gemara, let's glance at the side where we have our topic heading. We call this a tatnose, a subtopic heading. Maisa shel Baal shehotzi sheish meos kesef, an incident involving a husband who spent 600 pieces of money, we'll say $600, lehotzois haderech, expenses for a trip, kedei ligvois arba meos kesef shenoflu lishto, in order to collect $400 that his wife inherited. And from the $400 that he collected, he took a dollar for some personal needs, and then he divorced the wife. This, of course, is a continuation of the sukkia that we left off with, where we discussed a husband that had invested in his wife's properties, made improvements in them, and we learned in the Mishnah that if he made investments and derived even a little bit of benefit from those properties, and then divorced his wife, he has no right to seek compensation for the investments he made in her property. So now, with that having been said, let's now turn to the Gemara text. Hahi itzah, there was a woman, denoflu lo arba meis zuzi bechozoi. Bechozoi is the name of a place. So in Bechozoi, there was 400 zuz, an amount of money, that was awaiting her as an inheritance. Ozil gavra, her husband went, apik shismea, he spent $600 on the journey, isi arba mea, in order to bring the 400. The Bahadi Dikasi, on his way back with the money, Itzdirich Lechad Zuzo, he needed one Zuz, Vishokal Minayon, he took from the 400 that he was bringing, the 400 that his wife inherited. Also Lekame Rav Ami. The case came to Rav Ami. The husband is claiming that he spent 600 Zuz on the trip. Is he deserving of any compensation? So, Omar Lay, Rav Ami said, and this is what we call the first stage of Rav Ami's responses, Masha hoitzi hoitzi u'masha ochal ochal. In other words, you don't have any compensation. We've seen this, we mentioned this earlier, and we learned this in the Mishnah, that when a husband makes an investment in his wife's needs, his wife's property, so he benefited from it, even a very small amount, so that's it, too bad, no compensation. Omrule Rabbonon Rabami, Hani Miliheho de Kochal Pira, the halocha of Mashotzi Hotzi Mashoch halocha, that's where he ate the fruits, he ate the produce produced from the property that he had invested in. But in this case, it's not a function of his eating fruits. Hokarna ka'ochil, the hotzah, he ate from the principal, which is meaning from the 400 zuz in cash that he brought. He took from that, and he had made an investment in acquiring that. Omar lehu im kain have lay. Then, if that be the case, So then it's a case of hoitzi v'lo ochal, making expenditures and not having received any benefit from the peros. Yishova kama hoitzi vito. Then the law is, he swears how much he had spent and gets compensation. Yishava kama hoitzi v'yitol. Before we go in the, further in the Gemara, we glance at the side where we have a topic heading. Shnei deyos, v'hasbir, dvorav shorav asi. We'll see two approaches in how to explain Rav Asi, the teaching of Rav Asi, al hodikotoni, regarding the Tanaic statement, Yishava kama hoitzi v'yitol. That is what we saw in the Mishnah, the Komer Rav Asi, and Rav Asi said regarding that, v'hu sheyesh shevach keneged hoitzah. That's the statement he made. The translation would be, and provided that there is improvement, there is increased value corresponding to the investment. V'yachar kechomad v'girsha, and then the husband divorced her. Now, let's see the Gemara. The Mishnah said, Yishova kama hoitzi v'yitol, that when you have a husband that made investments in his wife's properties and did not derive any benefit from the peros, from the fruits, the husband is can swear how much he spent and receive compensation. Omra vasi, v'hu shiyesh shevach keneged hoitzah. Now, this is true if there is improvement that corresponds to his investment. The Gemara asks, Lamai hilchasa? And in order to appreciate the question, let's take a look at Rashi. Lamai hilchasa, we're looking at Rashi in the lower part of the narrow lines. Two possibilities. You can see we have them highlighted with diamonds in the Rashi. Li'akule ole, is this a kula, a leniency for him? That if, as a result of his investments, there was more profit than his expenses. Lo boing shvua, then there would be no need for him to take a shvua. Oy lachmuri ole, or this is a stringency imposed on him. Ulamemar, and to tell us, the e yitzia yisera, that if his expenses exceeded the profits, lo shokil ela kishir shebach, he would then be entitled only to the amount that corresponds to the profits, to the increased value. V'afilu b'shvua lo amrinon yishava kama oitzi vital. And even with taking an oath, we are not going to say, let him swear and get compensation in accordance with how much he had expended. Not so. But even with the shvua, in a situation that the expenses exceeded the profits, the increased value, he'll only be able to get the amount of expense of investment that corresponds to the shevach, the profits in the field or in the property. So now these two possibilities that we read in the Rashi are in fact the two opinions that the Gemara reveals, Abaye and Rava, in interpreting Ravasi. The Gemara continues. Omar Abaye. What Ravasi was telling us is that the Mishnah that it said he swears and collects according to the amount he had invested. Abaye says she'im hoya shevach yesar. So from Ravasi's comment, we learn that when do you take a shvua to collect your investment or get compensation for the investment after divorcing the wife? That's when the shevach, the improved value, the increased value, is the same as his expenses. However, if the increased value is greater than his investment, than his expenses, noitel es ha'itzah below shvua, then he's entitled to recover his expenses, his investments, even without taking an oath. Omar le Rava, im kain, if That is how to understand Rav Asi. Then you're opening up a door for tricksters. Im kein osi la'arume. You're leaving room for trickery. What's the trickery here? So Rashi says, osi la'arume. The Omar, a person will say, Botsir Mishvacha Purta, a person will claim his expenses as being just a little bit less than the increased value, the Lishko below Shvua, and that way he'll be able to get compensation for his investment without taking an oath. People don't like to take oaths. This will enable him to avoid that situation. Even though he's not going to be getting his full compensation, but it's worth it to him. As an example, imagine the shevach is 100, and 100 zuz, or $100. That's how much the property improved, increased in value. And his hoitzos, his expenses were $100. Well, according to Rav Asi, you'd have to swear in order to get your compensation. According to Abaye, if the shevach was $100 and the expenses were $99, so he wouldn't have to swear because of what we just said, that if the shevach exceeds the expenses, you get without taking an oath. So, and you don't have to swear. So Rava says, if that's the case, so then if a guy actually made expenses corresponding to the shevach, you know what he's going to do? He's going to say, I spent just a little bit less, and thereby be able to recover his expenses minus just that little amount, and not have to take a shvuah. So you're inviting tricksters to practice their trade. Therefore, Rava says differently. Elo Omar Rava Sheim Hoysa Hoitsa Yisera Ala Shevach. What Rav Asi was telling us was that if the expenses, the investment, exceeded the increased value, Ein loy ela hoitza shiur shevach u bishvua. The husband will be able to recover his expenses only up till the amount of the shevach, and all of that only if he takes an oath. Describing how much he actually spent. As you can see, we have a slash mark indicating that which follows is a new trend of thought. On the side, we have a topic heading, the nosei, which reads, Baal Shehoirid Arisin Lenichse Ishtoi. A husband, instead of physically cultivating the field himself, he sent sharecroppers to work the field. Just in general, or oris arrangement entitles the oris to a certain percentage of the crops that are produced. That's in general the oris arrangement. In other words, instead of paying a worker on a daily basis a certain wage, he is entitled as an oris to a percentage of the harvest. So a husband had hired arisen to work the fields of his wife. Umishochal kimo omad v'girsha. And the husband benefited a little bit. As we saw in the Mishnah, he benefited a little bit. And then divorced his wife. Mao shitlu arisen kfi chelkon. Can the arisen demand their anticipated percentage of the harvest? Now the Gemara. Ibayaloh, Baal Shehirid Arisin Tachtov. a husband sent Arisen to work the field instead of himself. Tachtov means instead of himself. Can the Arisim get their expected percentage? And as we said in our introduction, the case here is where the crops had started developing, and in the meantime, the husband had eaten a little bit. And now is the question of, he divorces her. Can the Arisim expect their pay in the form of a percentage of the harvest? Two sides of the question. That the diamond here is used to highlight the two possibilities, as we indicate in the Mivneh heading. So the Gemara continues, Adaito debal nochis. Did the Arisim go with the understanding of the husband? In other words, he is the one that sent them in to work, not she. And when the Baal is out of the picture, he divorced her, he's out of the picture, and he doesn't get anything, based on the halacha we said already, that whatever expenses he made, and whatever he ate, and he did eat something here, as we said just before. So, since they're coming in because of him, the husband, their presence is only because he had ordered them, or he had hired them. He's out of the picture, so they're out of the picture. As the Gemara says, istalik le baal istaliku luhu. Istalik means to be removed. When the husband is removed from the picture in his divorcing of the wife, so they're out of the picture too. They have nothing to expect. Oy dilma. Or possibly adaito de aro nochis. Vaadai of aro ki kaimo la risi kaimo. Or they were hired for the purposes of the land. And the land is still there. And the land is destined to be cultivated by Arisim. Rashi explains that if the husband had not sent them into work, the wife would have sent them into work. The land needs Arisim. It's not a function of the Baal so much as the need of the land. That is the question. And there's a bracketed section, after which the Gemara concludes the question with the expression, my havi Allah. Now, within the brackets, Rava asks regarding the first possibility. He's going to question the first possibility, and the Gemara will answer it. So the question, the basic question of the Gemara that began with the Bailaho, that remains till the end of the bracketed section. So now that having been said, we go in the brackets, Maskif lo Rova bar Rav Chonon. Rova bar Rav Chonon asks on the first possibility, my shno may hayoyred lesoich ste chaveroi v'noto shelo birshus shomen lo v'yodo ala tachtona. Why should the Arisen be viewed any differently than a case of an outsider? Someone notices that his friend's property needs some kind of care, needs some kind of improvements, and without being invited, he goes ahead and creates those improvements. He does what needs to be done. He gets compensation. It's not necessarily a full compensation, but he gets, as Rashi says, Shomen lo v'yodo ala tachtoino. Rashi explains toward the bottom of the Rashi commentary, Lito ayetzio kishior shevachi, is entitled to recover his expenses in accordance with the increased value. And here, in possibility one, we're suggesting boy lisluki below klum, the possibility of them being removed without any compensation. Why should they be in the position to receive no compensation when in a similar situation of an outsider coming and doing services for his friend, the outsider is deserving of a minimum amount of compensation, as we saw in Rashi. So the Gemara answers, there's a difference. Hasam, in the case of Yorid L'Sof Stei Chavero, Someone goes into his friend's field, as we explained, and he made improvements. He planted it without being invited to do so. There, Leko Inish Tetach, there was no one else that was going to do it. You see, this guy, this outsider, was walking along and he saw that no one was tending to the property. So he was the only one. However, Hocha, in our case of the woman married to a man, and that husband, that man, the husband, he went and hired workers instead of his own doing the job. Well, Iko Baal de Torach, there is the husband that could have done it. So she's figuring, you know, there's this side to suppose that she can figure. He didn't need the workers there. He could have done it himself. Why should I have to pay a percentage of the crops to the workers when he could have done it himself? So the Gemara asks, "My Havi Allah, what is the law in this case?" Omer Rav Huna, Braid Rav Yeshua, Chazinon. We evaluate. E Baal Orishu, if the husband himself was an Oris, he knows he knew how to cultivate property, and if they wouldn't have gone into the field, so he would have done it himself. Then we say, Istalik Le Baal Istalku Lehu. When he's out of the picture, they're out of the picture. In other words, the workers were really, we'll call them non-essential. So she will not have to part with any percentage of the crops for them. Ibal avorasu, if the husband had no capabilities in agriculture, then aro larisa kaima, then the land needed to have arisim, and she would have had to hire them anyway. And in that case, they will receive compensation. Before we continue, notice we have a slash in our Gemara indicating that that which follows is a new trend of thought. On the side, we have a nosei, a topic heading, Haim Baal Yochel Limkor Karka Malug Shel Ishto Liachir Leperos. Can a husband who, as you know very well by now, has rights to the fruits from properties that his wife brings into their marriage. Here the Baal, instead of cultivating the property and keeping the fruits for himself, for the family, this husband sold the property, now not a full sale, he sold it only with respect to the fruits, so that some outsider will pay the husband a certain amount of money, and that will entitle the outsider to cultivate the field and benefit from the fruits. Now, is that a deal? Can the husband do that? Once again, we need not emphasize that a husband, with regard to the Nichsei Malug, he is not the owner of the properties. The principal belongs to the wife. He has only fruit rights. And in effect, what we're asking about, can the husband sell the fruit rights to someone else in exchange for, let's say, in exchange for cash? Now the Gemara, three lines from the bottom. Baal Shemochar Karka Leperos Mahu. A husband that sold his wife's Karka Malug to some outsider for the outsider's acquiring the fruit rights. In other words, the outsider will cultivate the field and keep the fruits for himself. Mahu. Mi amrinon mai dekoni akni. Do we say that which the husband owns, he can transact? Now, what does the husband own? The husband had fruit rights, so he can transact that to someone else. Oy dilmo. Or it could very well be something else. Kitakinu le rabbonon peres labal. When the rabbonon enacted the understanding that the fruits of a wife's field go to the husband, that is a, we'll call it a mere privilege. Mishum revach besa. It's only because by the husband harvesting the fruits of his wife's field, so he'll bring them into the house, and there's more food in the house. That's revach besa. There's more food to eat. It creates greater abundance in the house. We're at the top of Omid Beis, where we read Mishum Revach Besa, Aval Izvuni Lo. But to sell his fruit rights for cash, No, that is not part of the original Peiros enactment. The Gemara responds, and with their two Lishonos, you see diamonds that appear, there are two Lishonos in Rava, two versions of Rava. Yehuda Mor Bar Mereimar Mishmei de Rava, Omar Masha Osa Osui. So the first approach, Yehuda Bar Mereimar says, in the name of Rava, that which the husband did, he did. It's binding. He's allowed to do it. Rav Papi Omar Mishmei de Rava Lo Osa Velo Klum. It's a non-deal. Now, that would correspond to saying it's a non-deal, would correspond to the Svora that the whole enactment of Peiros was from Revach Besa. Now there's not going to be Revach Besa. There isn't now an abundance of food in the house. He sold the fruit rights away to someone else. Omar Rav Popa. Now, notice we have a long point here. Rav Papa makes a point. He says that Hod Yehuda Mor Bar Mereimar, that which he ruled that the husband's sale was a good sale, Lav Beferush Itmar, it was not told to Yehuda Mor Bar Mereimar explicitly by Rava Ela Michlola Itmar. This is a very common situation. Expression that you see in the Shas that someone reports a halacha, and the report was not based on an actual transmission, an actual mesora from the source he's quoting, but by virtue of an observation of his that did he come to the conclusion. And let it be known that when you see this structure, almost all the time, it invites a problem. In other words, there's a weakness that will emerge, a weakness in the logic that will emerge. So, Rav Papa is saying that the tradition that Yehuda Mor Bremer had in the name of Rava was not something that he received as a formal tradition, but rather based on an observation, and then we'll see how there's an inaccuracy over here. That's what Elo Michlola Itmar implies. What happened? Tahi itza de Ailo Le Legavra Tarti Amsa. A woman married a man, and in marrying him, she brought into the marriage two bondmaids, two maidservants. And these maidservants are called Nichsei Muluk. That's called, it's property. She owns these slaves. They're her property. He, the husband, is allowed to benefit from their cooking and their baking and what have you, but he doesn't own them, their principal value. So she gets married, bringing two maidservants into the marriage that she owns. Also, Gavra Nosivit Sachriti. The husband went ahead and married a second wife. Ayu lo chado minayu. And the husband took one of the two maidservants and instructed her that she should take care of the needs of the second wife. Now, this is similar. Now, we're not saying it's exactly the same, but it's similar to the idea of, now, the husband had rights to their services, so what did he do? He took and redirected her services to a second wife. That's similar to the case of a husband selling the fruit rights that he has in the field to someone else. The first wife that brought in the two maidservants came to Rava and screamed. What's that? She was obviously opposes that the maidservants that were brought in to serve herself and her husband, fine, but now they serve a tzora, second wife. Lo ashkech bo. Rava did not pay attention. And it's now, Rava didn't pay attention if you were, let's say, more Yehuda Mor Bar Mereimar, looking at this situation, you might conclude that it's a function of the husband having a right to sell that which he was entitled to. Man dechazer savar. Now, man dechazer, one who saw this, would figure this is like Yehuda Mor Bremer Emar, mishum de savar, because Rava is of the opinion, masha asa asui, that which a husband did, he had a right to do. The loy he. And here, you see the Gemara says that conclusion is not accurate. It's not so. In other words, the action of the, or is Rava's ignoring of the original wife's claim isn't because the husband has a right to sell that which he was entitled to. That's not the case here. Rather, Mishum Revach Besa, the issue with regards to what rights does a husband have, it is only if you consider the Revach Besa possibility. The Ha Korovach. And here, with the maidservants, there still was Revach Besa. In other words, that second maidservant, she was still doing what they called Sorche Baya. She was still caring for the house, for household needs. Maybe she was giving us more attention to the second wife, but you know, more catering to her, more so than obviously if she hadn't been there. But nevertheless, she is also participating in the household needs. So there is Revach Besa, as opposed to the case of the husband selling the fruit rights of his wife's field to someone else. There would be no Revach Besa, and in that case, Rava would not have allowed the husband to sell the fruit rights to someone else. There you would have all the produce wouldn't end up in the husband and wife's house in such a case. V'hilchisa baal shemochar karka leperos lo osa v'lo klum. The Gemara rules like Rav Papi, and in effect like Rava, straight through, realizing now that Yehuda Mor Bremer had no reason, no right to conclude what he did regarding Rava. Now, my taima, why do we say that a baal that sells the fruits lo osa v'lo klum? So, if you look at, we have numberings here. So, if you look at the second number, it's Rava. Well, we already know that Rava said. In other words, it's just repeating what we said earlier, that Rava's concern is Revach Besa, and you will be diminishing the Revach Besa factor if the husband sells the fruits away. And there was, the husband was entitled to the fruits only because of Revach Besa. And now that won't be, so he has no right to do it. Let's go over now Abaye, number one. Abaye Amar, Chayshin al Shema Tachsif. We're afraid that if the husband sells the field for fruit rights to someone else, that other guy isn't going to take good care of the field. He knows that he's not the real owner of the field per se. He's only going to get the produce of the field, sort of squeeze the field for whatever it's worth just to get maximum produce without taking care of the essentials of the field itself. That's Shema Tachsif. He might let it go bad. And Rava Omar, as we said, the reason that Baal Shemocha Karka Leperos Los V'Leklum is because Mishum Revach Besa, the husband's entitlement to the fruits in the first place is only because of Revach Besa and not for selling it to someone else. My Binayu, what would be a difference between the analysis of Abaye and Rava? In other words, what's a practical difference? Give me a case where I'll see that in one case we'll allow him to sell and in one case not. And in, according to one opinion we'd allow him to sell and according to the other opinion not. So, Iko Binayu, the Gemara gives you three possibilities, three cases. A case, that a situation that would represent a difference, Aro de Mikrav Lamasa, a parcel of land that's Mikrav, that's near Masa, near the town. In other words, where this couple lives, there is a piece of land that the wife owns, and the husband would sell the parcel of land that's near town. He would be selling it to someone else for fruit rights. So if the consideration is Revach Besa, there is no Revach Besa here, so he would not be allowed to do that. However, if the consideration is, like Abaye said, that the purchaser is going to let the field go bad, well, since it's close to town, it's not going to go bad. They'll be supervising the situation. So he would be allowed to sell it. Inami, Baal Oris Hu. Another case is where the husband himself is going to continue working the field, and the purchaser, the fellow who purchased the fruit rights, will simply be receiving ready fruits courtesy of the husband's efforts in the field. Now, the fruits are going to be transferred to that outsider, so there's no revach besa. So from Rava's standpoint, even if the Baal, the husband, is going to be working the field, there's still the reduced or the deprived revach besa consideration. On the other hand, is the field going to go bad? No, the husband is going to take care of the field. Don't forget, this husband is always in the back of his mind. He's figuring that if his wife dies, he's going to be the heir to that field. Inami, another situation where there would be a point of difference. Zuzi v'ka'ovid behu iska. In exchange for the sale of the fruits, the husband gets cash. However, the cash that he gets, he reinvests. And through the reinvestment, let's say he takes the cash and buys a parcel of land, and from that parcel of land he produces fruits that he'll bring into his own house. So in that case, there is the revach besa consideration. Therefore, according to Rava, in this case, he'd be allowed to do it. Once again, he's receiving cash, and provided he reinvests the cash for further profits, so you have revach besa. However, according to Abaye, it wouldn't be allowed because there's still the fear of Shema Tachsif. The guy who purchased the field for the fruit rights will let it go bad. And now we come upon a new Mishnah. You can see it's a rather long Mishnah going to almost the end of the page. We have a topic heading on the side, the Nose, Dine Hanechosim Shenoflu L'Shemeres Yavam. Here we're going to talk about not a married woman, but a woman who is currently a widow. Her husband had died, leaving no children, but there is a surviving brother. So she's not a free agent either. She is bound to the Yavam. And while a widow in this state, she inherits properties. We will deal with Zechus Mechirasam, who has rights to sell those properties. And we'll discuss Mesa Ma Yasu Binechosel. If she dies as a Shemeres Yavam, what is to be done with her properties? And there's a whole series of ownership elements or property elements that need to be discussed. The Mishnah. Shemeres Yavam Shenoflu Lo Nechosim. As a widow waiting for the Yavam marriage, hasn't taken place yet, and at that point that she's a widow, she inherits properties. Moidim Beisham Beis Hillel Shemecheres V'Nesenes V'Kayom. As opposed to previous Mishnayos, where we saw Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai arguing about an arusa that inherits properties, this is different. She's a widow, and as such, Beis Hillel concedes, agrees with Beis Shammai that she has full control over the properties. She can sell them, she can give them away, and the deal stands. Mesa ma ya'asu b'ksubasa uvenechosim hanichnosim v'yotzim ima. The Shemeres Yavam, if she dies, what is to be done b'ksubasa? Now the term ksubasa, we look in Rashi, b'ksubasa b'nedunya shechnisalo v'shamasalo b'ksubasa. The ksubasa is a reference to the dowry that she brought into the marriage, and it was assessed, and it was written down. It was written into the ksuba, v'kibulo v'achriyusin, and the husband had accepted upon himself to guarantee maintenance of that value. V'rashoy lo tzim. The husband himself had been had a right to sell those properties, being that in the ultimate case of his divorcing her, she would receive the value that was recorded in the ksuba of those properties. So now we have a shomeris yavam that dies, and there are these properties that had been written into the ksuba. We call them nichsei tzon barzel. They're nechosim, they're properties that are like iron. Their value is like, doesn't, just like iron is solid, their value remains solid. The husband had accepted upon himself, as we said, achrayas, ensuring their value. So that's one issue. And the second is b'nechosim ha-nechnos yosim imo. That's a reference to nichsei melug. Those are properties that a woman had brought into the marriage, but their value had not been written into the ksuba. Those kind of properties, as we've seen already numerous times, are properties that the principal is owned by the wife. The husband had no right to sell them. When they come into the marriage with her, and when she leaves the marriage, they go out with her. Now, these properties are there, and she died. What happens? Beis Shammai Omrim Yechalku Yorshe Habal Im Yorshe Av. The heirs of the husband and the heirs from her father's side, in other words, from her family, they split. Now Rashi takes pains to point out that Beis Shammai is referring to the Nichsei Melug. That is split between the two. With regard to the Ksuba, that Rashi says, according to Beis Shammai, you won't have the Yorshe Av splitting it with the Yorshe Habal. And just a detail that even though the Mishnah had asked, what are we going to do with the Ksuba as well as the Nechosim HaNechnos Yosimo, Beis Shammai addresses only the issue of the Nechosim HaNechosim Yosimo, doesn't deal with the Ksuba. And all that information you can find in Rashi. We continue. Ubeis Hillel Oimrim Nechosim Bechezkosan. Now this phrase Bechezkosan is not clear. Rashi points out that the Gemara in Bava Basra deals with that issue. What Bechezkas whom? So we'll leave that as such. What else? Uksuba. The Ksuba referred to here, and all of this information you see in Rashi, is a reference to the money that the husband owes to his wife. If he divorces her, and now she's a widow, that's the basic mona or mosayim. If she had been married as a widow previously, it would be 100 zuz. If she was a virgin, a basula, she would be entitled to 200 zuz, and any extra that the husband had guaranteed the wife. So that's called the toisefes. So the ksuba is that, the basic 200 zuz plus the toisefes. Beis Hillel tells you, becheskas yorshe habal. It remains in the husband's family, the husband's heirs. Nechosim ha-nichnosim ha-yotzin ima, that is the nichsei malug. Those are properties that she brought in to the marriage from her father. Those are properties that the husband had no right to sell. So, b'chezkas yorshe ha'av. Those properties will be inherited by her father's, by her side of the family. Her father's and his heirs. We continue. Hiniach Ochiv, the husband who's now deceased. When we say Ochiv means his brother, because we have in the foreground, we have the Yovam, the surviving brother that's anticipating marrying this woman, but we understand she's right now didn't do Yibum. Hiniach Ochiv Mo'os. If the brother, and here we're dealing with it's you, from the context you can see. Here we're dealing with a standard case. You've got a Shomeres Yavam, and meaning she's alive. And the brother had left, the deceased brother had left Mo'os, had left cash. Ilokach Bohen Karka V'Ochel Peros. So the money is used to buy a piece of land, and the Yavam will benefit from the fruits. Let's take a look at Rashi. Ilokach bohen karka lefi sheksubasa al nichse bailo harishon kiritoni lekamon. Her ksuba is paid from the properties of her original husband. Lefikach nichse hames achroin leksubasa. Therefore, the properties left by her deceased husband are duty bound to cover her ksuba. Elosha Yavam Oichel Peros Im Miyabim Oisa. The Yavam will be entitled to eat the fruits if he marries her. Now we didn't mention that before, but never too late. When the Mishnah says Yilokim Amkav, who Oichel Peros, if he does Yibum with her, the Yavam is entitled to the Peros. The Kosovar, this point in the Mishnah, in other words, the Tanakhama, the Chachomim here in the Mishnah, are of the opinion Metalteli Mishtabdi Liksuba, that even the portables of the deceased husband, the portables as well, are bound to the Ksuba payment. We continue. The brother left, number two, Peros. The brother left fruits. What kind of fruits? So, Aleph, Hatlushin Minakarka, fruits that were not attached to the ground anymore. Yilokach ben karkav ochel peros. So the Yavam will, like we saw just before, he'll buy a parcel of land, and if the Yavam, if he is miyabim, or if he marries her, he's entitled to the fruits. Hamechuborim bekarka. The husband died leaving a parcel of land with fruits attached to the ground. Omer Rabbi Meir. Shomen oisa kamo hi yofa beperos v'kame yofa below peros. We make an assessment or an evaluation of how much the ground, the field is worth with the fruits and how much it would be worth without them. And that differential, v'hamosar, that difference, ilokach ben karka v'ochel peros. The yavam, upon marrying her, would take the value, that differential value, and buy land and derive benefit from the fruits of that purchased land. V'chachomim omrim, peros hamechuborim bekarka shelo. The chachomim, at this point at least, we see them saying that attached fruits belong to the yavam. Hatlushin minakarka, the fruits that are detached from the ground, that were left by the deceased, kol ha-kedem zocha bohen, whoever comes first gets them. Kodam hu zocha, if the yavam takes them, he keeps them. Kod mohi, if the wife, if the widow, the wife, now she, because she does yibum, if she takes them, then yilokach bohen karka v'hu ocho peros. A parcel of land is bought, and she's considered the owner of that, the owner of the principal of the land, and the fruits the Yavam is entitled to eat. Konsa harehi ki ishto l'chol davar. When the Yavam marries the Yavama, the widow of his brother, she's like his wife for all purposes. Bilvach takes subasa nirse bailo rishon. The only difference being that, assuming that there was an estate left by the first husband's estate is used eventually to pay her ksuba if that should come to be. Lo yoimar lo, the yavam should not say to the yavama that he marries, Hare ksubasech munachas ala shulchan. He would allocate or take an amount of money and put it on the table and say, there is your ksuba. Ela kol nechasav achroin l'ksubasa. Rather, all the property that he inherited from his brother, all of it is bound to the payment of her ksuba, up to the amount of the ksuba. If we skip the bracketed section momentarily, Girsha, if a Yavam divorces her after he takes her in, Ein lo elo ksuba. After divorcing the Yavama that he had taken in, he then pays her the ksuba, and that's it. She gets whatever the value of her ksuba was. Now Rashi adds here, Ein lo elo ksuba avol kol zman shelo girsha. As long as he hadn't divorced her, kol hanechasim mishubadim la, all of the properties are bound to her. The eino rashoi limkor, he has no right to sell them. Now we skipped a section. Let's go over it. V'chein lo yomar adam liishto. Just like we said regarding a man who marries the avama, a man who has a wife. Standard marriage, person should not tell his wife, Hare ksuba sech munachas ala shulchan. Here you see your ksuba, the amount of your ksuba, here it is. I'm earmarking these specific funds for your ksuba. He shouldn't do that. Ela kol nechasav achroyin l'ksubasa. All of a husband's properties are bound toward the payment of the ksuba. The Mishnah then continues, Girsha, we said, in the case of the Yavama, he divorces the Yavama after he had taken her in, Ein lo elo ksuba. All she is entitled to is the payment of the ksuba. And as Rashi said, that before the divorce, so all of the property that he inherited from his brother she had a lien on it for her ksuba payment. But assuming that the estate was worth more than the ksuba, upon her divorce, she gets only the ksuba. Hechzira, if he decides to take her back, harehi kechol hanoshim, v'ein lo elo ksuba bilvad. She is considered like any other woman, and just like a man who divorces his wife, he can take her back. And when he takes her back, he's taking her back with the understanding that her ksuba is the original ksuba. On the side of the Gemara, we have a topic heading, and as you can see, we're close to the end of our daf, and we're at the beginning of a new topic. Bear in mind that we'll begin the topic, but the topic itself extends for quite a while beyond the, beyond the context or the confines of a daf yomi style shiur. So let's begin the topic. We've glanced aside, we read the Nosei, the topic heading says, Shemeres Yavam Shemesa Mi Kovra, a woman who was waiting for the Yavam to marry her, but it never came to be. She died. Who is responsible for her burial? Ibayaloh, the Gemara asks, Shemeres Yavam Shemesa Mi Kovra, who is to bury her? Yorshe Habal Kavrila de Koyar Siksubasa. Do we say that the heirs of the husband, they are to bury her because they are the ones to inherit the ksuba? O Dilmo, Yorshe Av Kavrila, or maybe her family is to see to her burial, de Koyar Si Nechosim Nechosim Yotzimima. Because they're the ones that are going to inherit the Nichse Malug properties that she had originally brought into her marriage. Omar Rav Amram. So Rav Amram attempts to provide us with an answer. He cites a source, Toshma, the Sanya. We have a Tanaic source that says Shemeres Yavam Shemesa. We continue at the top of Daf Pei Aleph. Yorsheha Yorshe Ksubasa Chayovin Bekvurasa. Those of her Yorshim, meaning she had two sets of Yorshim we saw already. So those of her Yorshim that inherit the Ksuba, which are the Yorshe HaBaal, the Ksuba being the Mono Masayim and the Tosefes Ksuba that we made reference to earlier, so that privilege of inheriting the Ksuba obligates them to see to her burial. To whatever expenses, whatever is needed to see to her burial, they have to pay for that. Omar Abaye Af Anan Nami Tanina. We have a Mishnah that bears this out. And up till now, so we saw Rav Amram quoting a Braisa, and this brings more strength to it, hence Abaye's comment that we have a reference to this in a Mishnah. Now the reference is from what we call a yitur lashon, an like extra terminology, and that is a point that Tosfos makes. But nevertheless, this source will be a support. What does it say? Almona nizaynus minichse yisaimim, a widow. As a widow, she derives her food support from the properties that the husband's heirs inherited. The Nichsei Yisomim are literally the properties of the orphans. Umaisi Yodel Shalahen, her work production goes to them. V'ein Chayovin B'Kvurasa. The Yisomim are not obligated to her burial. Yorshel Yorshe Ksubasa. Now, you see, we're talking about in our sugya, in our topic, we had been discussing a Shemeres Yavam. Now, Shemeres Yavam has, there are no Yisaimim. She doesn't, there were no children. So, this part of the source is, we'll call it an extra expression in order to teach about that case of the Shemeres Yavam. We just pointed out that when there are orphans, and they inherited an estate, they're not obligated to her burial. A husband is obligated to bury his wife, but he died before she did. So it's not the orphan's responsibility. Yorsheha Yorshek Subasa Chayovin Bekvurasa. Now there's this expression of Yorsheha Yorshek Subasa. We're talking about a woman that has a couple kinds of Yorshim. And what kind of woman is that? The Ezuhi Almono Shieshlo Shnei Yorshim. What kind of widow has two sets of heirs? Heve Yomer Zu Shomeres Yavam. As we saw earlier, when you're dealing with a woman, a Yavama, she was waiting for the Yavam, but she died before the Yibam. We see that the properties that are left are inherited by, some of them by her husband's family, some of them by her father's family. So she has two sets of heirs. So the Mishnah here is alluding to the Yavama, the Shomeres Yavam that died, and it says that those who inherit the Ksuba, namely the Baal's, the husband's family, they are the ones that have to see to her burial. The sugya itself continues with a flurry of questions and answers. And if just by scanning ahead of the page, you can see all of these triangles that are flip-flopping along the way. This is an attempt to keep track of the give and take stop, but of course, we'll have to pick that up in our next shiur. In the meantime, before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in contact with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.